day.
Thank you very much to Mr. Floyd Campfield and his wife, Kobe.
You're welcome.
Floyd Campfield was known as the Eel King. He was an avid hunter, a fisherman, and a collector of Native American relics that he found in the plowed fields along the Delaware River. Linda Slocum spoke with Floyd Campfield in 2012 from his home in Tustin, just outside of Narrowsburg, New York, as part of a recorded oral history project in the Delaware River Valley, titled Unearthed, sponsored by the Western Sullivan Public Library. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by a Radio Catskill volunteer. Special thanks goes to our guest, community member Linda Slocum, who shared her 2012 interview with Delaware River Eel King Floyd Campfield. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Gulf Coast Highway, he worked the rails.
Next up in our showcase are British and Irish folky covers of songs written by American songwriters. The Bagalone of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, brings you covers of songs written by the wondrous Nancy Griffith. Be sure to join me on Sunday afternoon at 3 here on Radio Catskill.
Did you spot a few photographers roaming Sullivan County over the weekend of October 12th and 13th? Probably attendees of the 37th annual Eddie Adams Workshop in Action. The workshop would like to thank everyone who participated in a photo shoot that weekend. The images couldn't be created without community participation. The 10 shows from that weekend are now online at eddieadamsworkshop.org under program, paid for by the Eddie Adams Workshop.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Hi, everyone. This is Greg. I have interesting friends who are always up for a good conversation about the things we should be talking about together, to learn and inform, to inspire, to make our little world a bigger place in Sullivan County, in New York State, in the United States, and around the world. It's time for Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Hello, everyone. If you're like me, you cannot get enough discourse and public debate during election season, but it all seems to focus on national elections. Frankly, I think there's more to be learned locally. So today we're going to be talking to my high school friend, Bill Connors, a lawyer who lives and breathes public service. He has been a fiscal analyst for the Minnesota House of Representatives. He has been a tax increment financing director for the Office of the Minnesota State Auditor, the city administrator of Evansville in our home state of Wisconsin, and an alderperson for the city of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. But perhaps most importantly, we serve together on the La Follette High School Senior Class Student Senate. Please welcome Bill Connors.
Hey, Greg, thank you. Happy to be here.
I am so happy to talk about these things. Let's just get to the meat of it. What has inspired you to commit to a life of government and public service and serving your community?
You know, I don't think about that question very often, but when I do, I think back to being a kid and for some reason, from a very early age, being very interested in current events. I mean, I would watch the Walter Cronkite news broadcast on CBS News and then run up to tell my parents about the terrible things that were happening. I couldn't even say Vietnamese. I would say to the Vietnamese people. So I was really, from a very early age, conscious about public issues and current events. And I'm not quite sure why that. I think maybe it was because my father would talk about things like that around the dinner table. He was somebody who paid a lot of attention to current events and politics, and maybe I just picked it up from him.
Well, I remember back when we were in school, forgive me for using judgmental language, but just this sweet little nerdy guy who you just knew was somehow going to manage to make some sort of contribution. And you really have. But let's go back to your parents quickly. What did they do for a living and how did they inspire you?
Yeah, so back when I was growing up, my father was a research chemist, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. And they read newspapers, they watched the news, they were well-informed people, and they talked about, you know, things like that around the dinner table with us kids. So it was not something new or different or odd when I started paying attention to politics. It was something I'd been seemed to be doing my whole life.
Well, what a constructive way of approaching that and looking at it as a kid. How has that, you know, you've raised children of your own. How has that affected your parenting in the hopes that I'm sure you want your children to be an even better citizen than you've been?
Yeah, well, you're right. I am a nerd, very much a nerd. I'm also a history nerd. So around the dinner table with our family, with our kids when they were growing up, I would quiz them on things I thought they should know about history. So, you know, particularly about U.S. history, when they got to a certain age, I thought they should know these things. And I would ask them about, you know, Declaration of Independence or, you know, all the way up to maybe the Vietnam War, just to see how much they knew. And if they weren't able to answer the question, I shared what I knew about it. And again, my wife and I both, you know, read newspapers, pay attention to the news. We get, you know, a lot now online in addition to from the newspaper, and would have conversations about those things. So one of our four children, got bitten by the same bug I did. And so she works for Wisconsin state government. She's the legislative liaison for the Wisconsin Department of Administration. So she's dealing with state legislators every day as her job. And, you know, it's very clear that she got that from me.
So education is a huge component in approaching these things responsibly. Yet we seem to be living in a time where people's feelings seem to almost matter to them more than the facts. How do you vet things to make sure that you have a fundamental bottom line understanding of the factors that are factual?
Yeah, and that is the challenge right now. You know, on the internet, you can see people posting things that sort of seem like they're legitimate all the time that are really not at all legitimate. And so, yeah, you need to, you know, exercise some critical thought when you hear something that sounds almost too good to be true, because it, for your side, from your point of view, you hear something that's like, oh, that'd be great if that were true. If that sort of thought goes through your head, it's like, ooh, that might not actually be true. And so yeah, I find myself from time to time reading something like that and going, let me go check some other sources and see if I can find anything to corroborate that.
I agree. You almost have to challenge the things that are part of your opinions rather than against your opinions, because it's unlikely to sway the place from which you make your choices, but you still have to be informed and responsible when you're involved with discourse or sharing your opinions.
Yeah, I think it's important for me, just from a personal ethic point of view, that when I'm sharing opinions and things I think are facts, that I'm credible, you know? And so if somebody, literally, I've had people point out to me from the other side and say, you know, that's not right. And they'll give me, you know, a source, and I'll go check, and I'll check several sources and go, come back to them and say, you're right. I was mistaken about that. I think that's very important.
And refreshing. How refreshing to hear someone admit they are mistaken.
Yeah, I think it gives you more personal credibility when you are willing to acknowledge that you don't know everything. And sometimes you're wrong. We all are. So we should admit it when we see it.
Which sites do you use to challenge your understanding? Or what's the process involved with you verifying what you read or want to share?
Oh, I will just do a Google search, you know, find some terms that I think will work. Do a Google search, try to find articles on that. You know, sometimes I'll go to some of the fact-checking sites that are out there and use those. But mostly I'm just trying to source kind of mainstream news that's on, that have, you know, presence on social media.
Do you like Snopes.com?
I will use that from time to time. That's one source I've used from time to time. But more often I'm just looking at, you know, New York Times, The Guardian from the UK, you know, I go outside of the United States and look at what they're reporting about the United States, because sometimes you can get a clearer picture that way. And then, you know, do that. What I don't like to do is to go off and look at kind of fringy left-wing or right-wing websites, which I don't consider to be very reliable. They'll take one little kernel of something that's accurate and, you know, blow it up and twist it in a direction that's way off base. And it's always like some unidentified source said this is true. And it's like, I'm not buying that.
And let's talk about what it's like to live in a swing state. You're in Wisconsin. What's that like these days as a battleground state?
Well, we're certainly getting lots and lots of advertising, radio, television, you know, things popping up in your feed, every way they can possibly think of to reach you. They're attempting to message you. And yet we have the presidential race is very close here. We have a U.S. Senate race, which is extremely close. There's a number of congressional races around the state that are hotly contested. So there's a lot going on. You know, you after a while, you get kind of tired of the advertising, frankly, being bombarded with it. Because it's not thoughtful. It's not like, let's talk about ideas and debate these things. It's these very twisted negative sound bites coming from both sides. That's really kind of disheartening.
And very often, I think it's behavior we would not accept from our children. So why are we accepting it from politicians?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great thing. To observation. You know, when they get in the room together for a debate, generally they are civil to each other, and they'll disagree, but disagree in a civil sort of way. But once they get away from each other, they go to a rally and they'll say the most outrageous, outlandish things, and then their advertising is just awful.
And a harangue, in my opinion. I don't know why you think the 12th or 20th mailing or internet ad is going to change my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, usually when you're doing repeated mailings, you're trying to hit somebody who you think is already likely to vote for you, and you're just trying to make sure that they get out there and do vote, because that's always the challenge. It's like we have these two camps that in Wisconsin, they're almost equally divided, and it's a question of which camp can produce higher turnout will win the election.
That's an excellent point. And speaking of higher turnout, I hope that we'll have even more listeners when we get back right after this brief station break.
Travels with Travels with Travels with Trees.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On the next Jazz Night in America, two virtuosos on two unique instruments from two parts of the globe. Banjo star Bela Fleck joins Colombian folk harpist Edmar Castaneda for a string throwdown at the Big Ears Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee. That's on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Travels with Triggs. And we are back, everyone. Travels with Triggs is talking with Bill Connors, my high school friend who has been a local elected official and now works as a lobbyist on behalf of real estate development for local government. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Local government. I'm wondering, Bill, as an elected official, as with any of the roles you have held, how do you think local government can help move things forward while the country is so divided?
Yeah, local government is great because, you know, a lot of the issues in local government don't divide clearly on the national partisan lines. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion at the local government level, at least around here, about housing policy. And we have a great shortage of housing in our area that's driving up the cost of housing. And so what should we do about that? And that people have different opinions on that, but they don't cleave along these, you know, partisan political lines. You can find Democrats and Republicans on one side and different Democrats and Republicans on the other side. So that not having it align exactly with the parties, I think makes it easier to have conversations about real policy. The other thing is that you're talking to people who you shop in the grocery store with, you know, it's not like somebody out in Washington or even at the state capitol who's kind of like this foreign power that's controlling you. These folks in local government, they're your neighbors. So you should be able to just talk to them, you know, just, hey, I heard this was going on. I'm a little concerned about that. Can you tell me more about that? And that's what I encourage people to approach it that way. If you hear something about your local government that doesn't seem to make sense, doesn't seem right, rather than condemn it based on that, what you heard, go find somebody in local government and say, I've heard this is going on. Is that true? Is that right? Can you tell me why that is? And oftentimes when you have that conversation, you learn A, that what you heard is maybe a little not accurate, or B, even if it's, you know, it's fairly accurate, there's some rationale for what they're doing. And when you have that, you may still disagree with it, but at least it'll be an informed disagreement. And having that conversation with a person who's, you know, like I say, essentially one of your neighbors, I think that's the way to restart the civil discourse in this country about public policy.
Well, and as two people who have served in local office, I find it very interesting that, again, there is a motion, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand the nuance of the law to which the municipality is held, that there are factors beyond that government and a standard on the county, state, or national level to which they must adhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. That the idea that we have all these various levels of government, and when you're at the local government level, when you're on the school board or you're on the city council, you're heavily constrained by state law. And, you know, if you take federal funds, by the strings that are tied to those federal funds that don't allow you to just do any old thing, that you must obey the law. At least we hope you will be obeying the law. That's a good thing, my book.
Most politicians, I think, would agree.
Yeah.
Now, when you look back on your service as a local elected official, what have been some of the biggest lessons or rewards?
One of the things that got me motivated to run for city council here in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and that I took very seriously after I got elected for the 5 years I served, and I've continued to do this even though I'm not in office anymore, is how can I help residents know what city government is doing or what the school board is doing or before they actually do it? so that you can actually have a conversation with your elected official before they make the decision about what your concerns are. And at the local government level, there's not as much news coverage. And so people tend to find out about what their local government decided to do after the fact. And they say, well, if I'd known that you were thinking about doing that, I would have said something. But they never even knew it was being talked about until after it was already decided. That's something I worked throughout. Yeah, I could say throughout the time I was on the Sun Prairie City Council, and I've continued to do it through social media to try to help people understand what's coming up and why they should care, how it would actually impact them. Because you can't get that from just like reading an agenda. You need somebody to give you some context about why this is being discussed and how it would affect you potentially to be able to have an opinion.
Well, I think it's a brilliant point to say why you should care. Very often people don't seem to care until things have gone in the direction they don't want it to go. It seems like you need to care preemptively.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to do, is help people have enough information to know why they should care and why they should reach out to their elected official and provide their input.
Well, and the word transparency has become such a buzzword in regards to government, and understandably so. But the most transparent of public officials can only be as effectively transparent as the person chooses to engage with it.
You need the citizens to be looking for an opportunity to participate. And so when they get some information and some explanation for why they should care, to be ready to sound off and share their voice. Or, you know, there's local government. Local governments have boards and commissions and committees for non-elected people that people can serve on. That's a great way to get your toe wet, get your foot in the door, learn something more about the local governments that really affect the quality of your life. If you can find the time to do that, I highly recommend that people volunteer to be appointed to one of those boards or commissions.
Well, and as you said, discussion is a good thing, and it might unvilify both directions. You know, the more you can discuss on a human personal level, the more you might understand points of view other than your own.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are things that I've had conversations with folks that didn't make any sense to me. Why are they thinking that? But once they share what their concern is, you know, I can better address it. And sometimes, you know, I can say once I know their concern, I can point out why what is being done really isn't going to have the impact that they're fearful is going to have. And then I learned something and they learned something.
Well, during public discourse, during a town board meeting, I love that because I happen to live in a town about which people are passionate. But also, sometimes when I'm listening to people who maybe feel differently than I did going into the meeting, I just take a breath and remember I did not take an oath to only represent the people with whom I agree.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. We need the input from people who don't agree with us, because that helps us make better policy. If everybody who thought exactly the same sat in a room and made all the policies, we wouldn't come up with very good policies for everybody.
And we are all limited by our own experience, right? We are both informed and limited by it. There are people with so many different needs or point of views or priorities other than my own that I think it would be unwise not to learn from that.
Yes, absolutely. The environment we grew up in and our, you know, place kind of in society shapes our point of view. It's really not healthy to only talk to people who agree with you. It's not good for your personal development. It's not good for public policy.
Or your ability to live in the real world, because, you know, we are now of a certain age where younger people are coming up And the world is changing in ways that we have to find inspiration with, because the world's going to keep changing. We can keep saying, I want it to be the way it was in the 1980s in Wisconsin, and all we're going to get out of that is frustrated.
Oh boy, do I have that conversation with folks frequently. Because yeah, I am a firm believer that change is inevitable and that change is usually good, especially if we all work on together about how that change is happening. But you can't stop it. And so if you're just like, here in Sun Prairie, our population is approaching 40,000, but it wasn't that long ago, it was 10,000. I mean, it's grown that rapidly. So there's many, many people who still live in Sun Prairie who just love that Sun Prairie when it was 10 or 15,000 people and really have a hard time dealing with how different Sun Prairie is when it's 40,000 people. And, you know, it's just like, I'm sorry, folks, but that's how life is. It just keeps changing.
And the government can help manage change, but it can't stop change, and it can't affect your approach to it. We still have personal responsibility.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and it starts with sort of our attitude. You know, you can be somebody who just hates what the community has become, but I don't know why you would do that, because it just not good for you personally. So if there are specific things about the way the community has become that you don't like, well, then let's work on those together. But let's not like be negative about everything about the community because it's different than it was when you were growing up. I don't find that to be a useful thing.
The key word is, let's work on that together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, as we wrap things up, Bill, we are living in such a fraught time, a time so fraught that if anyone had told us it was going to be this way when we were kids, we wouldn't have believed them. What's just one simple action that you think, with all of your experience, could help people process their frustration in a positive way so that we can start to untie this knot?
Yeah, I come back to try to find a way to contribute, try to find a way to serve, volunteer for something in your community, get to know more people, get out of your house, get out of your circle of comfort, and meet some new folks. I think that more than anything could help us if we were all willing to pitch in a little bit and help some folks and meet some new people.
I think that's great. And it's a wonderful way to end. I thank you for your time today and for becoming who I would have guessed you'd become when we were two little nerds walking through Robert M. La Follette High School in Madison, Wisconsin. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Special coverage of Election 2024 continues tomorrow on Radio Catskill with the candidates running for New York's 19th Congressional District. Incumbent Representative Mark Molinaro, Republican, and challenger Josh Riley, Democrat, recorded at the Black Library in Monticello, New York, taking questions from the audience. The Special Candidates Night event presented by the Sullivan County NAACP took place Monday night. You can hear it tomorrow night at 6 on Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election season.
We love Radio Catskill. It gives a lot of great programming.
I think we have a very split population, like most of the country, and getting two sides of a picture is really great.
Local news and interviews are very important.
It's more important than ever to have talented, smart people looking at the world and providing intellectual, well-reasoned coverage.
Your donation ensures Radio Catskill can maintain the level of integrity we bring to you every day. Give now at wjffradio.org.
November 1st is Seminary Hills Halloween Costume Party, 9 to midnight in Calicoon. A haunted evening of costumes, tarot, DJ, spooky drinks, snacks, and more the night after Halloween. Halloween party reservations at resi.com.
Also this fall at Seminary Hill, Oktoberfest menu, Thursday game nights in November, and Friday happy hours featuring live local music. More information at seminaryhill.com. Paid for by Seminary Hill.
WJFF, Jeffersonville.